relates to me. And I always had, kind of like an interest in, in the natural world. And when I was a kid, I lived in a lot of different places all around the world. And when I was very young, I lived in like Saudi Arabia, and I would go scuba diving, not scuba diving, snorkeling all the time. And so for a very young age, I was just aware of this like profusion of, beautiful, complicated, and weird environments underwater. And I think that was like maybe the first thing that sort of started the engine of my like interest in the natural world. But I also I lived for like 5 years in this cabin that I built myself in the forest in Southern Oregon, in this sort of like intentional community with a bunch of other, weirdos. And like living, and it was like way out there, and like we had very little infrastructure, and we kind of built all the structures on the land ourselves. And it was a real like immersion in just like having, like very minimal like human infrastructure around, and just being like in, like living in the forest. And during that period of time, I just like my sort of my awareness of all the different stuff that was going on around me at all times like increased exponentially. It was just like I would be sitting at my desk in this cabin that I built, and this like a family of, juvenile possums would like go past the door, and they're all like, and juvenile possums are like really hilarious, weird creatures because they're just like hissing like snakes all the time, and they're very cute, and they're just like scamp, and it's just, this thing is scampering past, or like every, as I would be like working on artwork at my desk, this wasps that lived in this nest in the ceiling would like, these mud dauber wasps would like just kind of come down past my ear and go out through this hole in the window. And I would just be there like writing or drawing or whatever, and then be like hum, and then go out. And then later in the day, they would come back in and be hum and go back to the nest. And so it was this context in which I really felt like I was submerged in the world in a way that I hadn't been for most of my life, living in the city. And that, I feel like that experience really transformed a lot of like, what I valued and what I thought, how I wanted to like, live my life, and what I wanted to do with whatever work I was creating, whatever ideas I was trying to express.
Do you still live in the forest? If not, why did you like leave?
I don't anymore, but the little house that I built is still there. I don't anymore because it's kind of difficult to sustain that kind of existence in the modern world. It was, we had no internet, we had only a landline, we had very little electric power, no running water. And so a lot of stuff that I wanted to do, I was like, I can't do it because we don't have any infrastructure. And those things, things like that, where like people start them in a period of like excited ideological idealism when they're younger, and then certain things, their lives change. Maybe they have a kid. Maybe they have other things come up in their life, and they need to make more money because like living rurally in extremely rural Southern Oregon, the economy is basically zero. So I would have to just go elsewhere to work and come back, and that was the only way I could like make a living. And it just, those things over time, people's changing lives and changing experiences led to them moving on towards other things, and eventually, just population collapse didn't really work anymore. So I moved to Portland, and I still had that little space there, but I try to maintain the connection to the ideas that I formed in that time of my life. But now I have access to a lot more infrastructure that I am able to like, work on my ideas in a lot more elaborate ways, which is also, it's a trade-off, like everything.
Great questions, you guys. Yeah.
Earlier, when you were talking about being like submerged in your art and the environment, you mentioned writing. Are you interested in writing as well?
I love writing. I wrote a book recently. which was a very satisfying experience because I kind of wrote it just it was like during the pandemic, like I wrote this book. And with no expectations of what was going to happen to it. Like I didn't have anywhere, anybody thinking that I was, that they were like, they weren't like, hey, where's the book, man? We need the book. So I was just free during the weird time distortion field of the pandemic to just write whatever it was that I wanted. And I had this very specific story that I wanted to tell about, my life, my family, and certain ways in which my family history, which is very strange, interacted with the history of the world in the 20th century. And then, so I wrote this book, and it's, it's finished now, and I'm trying to find a place for it to go, trying to find a publisher, and that's moving slowly, but I have confidence that eventually it will go somewhere. But I also like to write, I don't, if you've looked at the blog that I have, I for a long time now, I've been the, basically like the social media manager of that artist cooperative. So I'm always sort of composing the language that is how the cooperative is represented to the world, and like representing like the work and the ideas of individual people who are part of it and the group as a whole. And, and that is something that I've really enjoyed doing over a long time, because it is, it's like thinking about other people's ideas and how you think they might want to represent them, and how to knit that into this sort of like more global sense of a group of people who don't necessarily all agree politically, but are kind of all in the same, quadrant, for want of a better concept of like the economic authoritarian, like libertarian quadrant system. I don't know if you've seen that diagram. Anyway, but think about ways to talk about that to an audience that is going to make it seem interesting and engaging and exciting to an audience, and to express people's values and ideas. So that's been a really interesting thing that I've done a lot of. And also I try to write about, political and environmental ideas that I think about, things that I find interesting for the blog on that site. And I've done, I should do more of that, but it's a blog is kind of a, it's halfway between a magazine article and a Twitter post, where it's like you want it to be short enough that people are going to probably make it all the way through, but not so short that it's just like, it's just too brief to include a lot of interesting ideas.
Do you want to talk any about some of the books that you've made, not necessarily like as writing pieces, but artist books? Sure. That's a form that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, I mean, I have over the years, I have coordinated the production of these like groups of screen printed or printed objects as portfolios. So it's like working with a bunch of different artists who all are creating an image based on a particular theme, a bit of different like political idea, and then producing those things and then packaging them together as a big group of prints that are all different individuals or groups ways of interpreting a political idea. And we did one that was all about frontline climate change groups. So like each artist like portrayed the work and the ideas of a different climate organization. And we did one about like issues of migration and the militarization of the US-Mexico border. So it was like a bunch of different artists all working on their own ideas related to those subjects. And each of those things gets like kind of like packaged into a box, and sort of it functions as an easily distributable exhibit. So you can get one of these copies, you can put it up, and you have an art exhibit about this particular subject, and it's all there. And you can have events and have people come and talk about it, in the context of like maybe like some organization is doing some work and wants to have a fundraiser, and they can have these things there in the background for people to look at and talk about. So that's something that I've done a couple times, and I'm working on another one of those right now. But I've also done, I started working with this art book distributor in New York called Booklyn. And one of the people involved in that asked me if I wanted to make an art book that was just like just something that I made. So I used this is also something that I did during the pandemic because a lot of free time to work on like, you know, more expansive projects. And I produced this book of like lino cut prints on this letterpress that I have. Maybe I'll show it to you in a minute. But it was called Seven Elemental Forces, and it was these seven images of different you know, forces that we are going to have to interact with and deal with on a more regular basis as a result of climate change. You know, and it was sort of presented as a like a field guide. You're like, here's these things that you're going to have to deal with a lot more in the future. And I paired each one with a quote from somebody, either like a scientist or a politician or a regular person who had been quoted in the context of having to deal with these elemental forces in their life. Like, and they're things like fire and flood and disease and drought and things like that. And that was a really fun thing to produce and make this like, you know, kind of elaborate hand. I printed it all on individual sheets of paper and then glued them all together to make this book that you can read through like a book. And then Erica and I did a cool book project while we were at a residency recently in Tanzania, where we made this book that was the result of our conversations with the people who were basically the audience and community around this art space in the city of Dar es Salaam. And we asked people questions about climate change and had conversations about the ways that that is manifesting in their environment and incorporated those conversations and the ideas that we got out of them into the production of this artist book thing that was really fun and elaborate thing to create. Actually, I have it here.
Do you guys know what a lino cut is? That he used that word lino cut, and I was thinking maybe that is a term. I was thinking maybe we could kind of venture into like how it's made.
Sure.
The kind of like actual nuts and bolts of how printmaking works and the different kinds of printmaking. Would that be interesting for you guys to hear a little about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me see if I can pick this stuff up. And let's see here. Let's do a dramatic reveal. This is my press here. I'm speaking into the microphone, and then I'll put the microphone here. So this is the printing press. So here, this is a block that I was printing yesterday. So this is a piece of linoleum, right? Just like linoleum flooring, but this is slightly fancier for artist use. So you can see that I've carved this image into the surface of it. And what I do with this is that you put ink on the surface and then you press paper onto the ink and then you get a print, right? So let me go and grab the prints that I actually made. Right, and this I made yesterday. This is the impression that comes off of that block, right? So this is the block, and this is the impression. So you can do this, you know, in like things that are just like one color like this, and this is just a very kind of a simple design. It's like I carved this image of these three jellyfish into this linoleum, and then printed it on the press. You can also do it like, here's another example of a linoleum block print that is similar thing, but this is two colors. So you can see that there's a yellow block and a blue block, and I've printed one on top of the other. This is actually one of the best copies of this print. Right, so that's how I do things here in my home studio, because I have this press thing to work on. So I have this big stack here of all these different blocks that are the things that I use to print different stuff, and they're all just like different carvings that I use to make these different kinds of prints. And the press thing, let's see if you can see it there. So it's this, it's this nice, really nice old machine from the 20s. And you put ink on here, and you turn this little handle, and it puts the ink through the system. And then you roll this thing, you roll this thing back and forth, and that applies the paper to the inked block. So that is one way that I make things like that. Another way is through screen printing. And pull out here. All right, so this is an example of a screen print that I just made. And this image is, do you know what, you all know what screen printing is and how that works? Sort of.
Yeah, kind of.
So it's like,
kind of. Maybe some explanation is good.
Basically, like, you know, if you have a t-shirt, you know, with a design on it, usually that design is getting on there by screen printing. And screen printing is, you're using a squeegee to push the
Wait,
through the,
can you go back to the beginning? We couldn't hear what you were
saying. Silk screen printing is like applying, pushing ink through a stencil that is on a polyester mesh that is held in an aluminum frame onto a substrate. And either that's paper, or maybe it's a t-shirt or whatever else. You know, it's like, it's how most like t-shirts or sweatshirts or things like that, or hats, if you have just like, if it looks like it's just a single layer of ink, it's probably been put there by screen printing. So this image here is made with like three layers of screen printing. So there's like a red layer, that's what's like the first layer, and then on top of the red layer is the yellow layer, and then on top of the red and the yellow is the green layer. So a lot of printmaking works in this way, where you're just building up different layers of stuff to create different effects, different like ways that things look visually. And that's another really fun thing that I enjoy about printmaking, is just building up layers on top of each other. And you know, you make different colors, you make different textures, and it's just it's a very satisfying way to create an image. And the great thing is that you can make multiple copies of it. Like, I just printed like 100 of these things, of this cicada print. You know, it took me a few days, and it was a lot of work, because you're standing at this thing just like pulling and moving the paper, and pulling and moving the paper, and pulling and moving the paper. And you do that all day, and then you start again. But at the end of it, you have a bunch of copies of this, of this sort of like screen printed image. So those are like two ways in which I produce things. Oops, didn't work. Yeah, I just gotta stand over here.
Nicole, do you have any questions you want to jump in?
Yeah, so I actually had a question about the screen printing, sort of, I guess, logistically, or like how you think it out, because, you know, in my brain, like, that's not how art like works, where I can like see shapes and then like lay them down on a paper and create something. So I was wondering, like, for you, is that just something you've learned over time, or like, what is the process of sort of like, like, you know, having these colors and creating layers and creating like empty shapes or creating negative space and all that kind of stuff? Like, how does that work for you?
It can be complicated, and it can you have to do a bunch of planning in advance in order to make things turn out the way that you want them to. And sometimes they don't turn out the way you want them to, and sometimes that's okay. And then also sometimes it's not okay. And then you have to pretend that you like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's typically with, you know, like for example, with this thing, you know, I just made I made a drawing of the various shapes of it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to draw. Like, I drew basically like all the shapes of the insect, you know, the green layer here, which has all the detail on it. and like, you know, where every, like how everything was sort of oriented, and I drew a picture of that, and then I, you know, I drew on that picture all the other elements, like the circular bits and where I wanted all these other things to go. And then I figured out, okay, if I have this layer combined with this layer, it'll make a different color. So, okay, I need to make, you know, how many layers am I going to have total? Okay, I'm going to have three. And this like top drawing is going to be the basis for the underlayer. So you start with the one, you go from the level that has the most detail, and you work down from there, basically. It's like, because oftentimes when you're printing, you know, like you think about like a comic book. The way a comic book is printed is that they print the colors first, and the way those colors mix together makes a lot of different colors. And then on top of that, they print the black, right? So that's like the black line drawing that like traps all of the other colors and gives you the clear outline of where everything is, all the different shapes, how the different shapes are oriented. That's basically how it works with the kind of printmaking that I do, is you start with the layer that has the most information on it, which is often called the key block. And then you work down the layers from there to the bottom layer, which you're going to put everything else on top of, which everything else is going to mix with. And then the final layer that sits on top of it is the one that makes everything clear, right? It makes it shows you what all the relationships are with all the other things. Let me see if I have an example of that. Of course, I've spent the last decade trying to not do that. Here's a good example, right? So this is another screen print, right? So this is a combination of a screen print and a block print, right? So the black image here, that's something I made by carving linoleum and then printing it onto tracing paper. And I used that to make the silkscreen. But what I have here is I have these two layers of the purple and the pink. And the purple is the bottom layer, and the pink sits on top of it. But you can see under the black of the snake, there's also pink and purple. And they're doing this work to like show the shadow on the snake or the light on the snake. And then, so you've got all this like information in there, and then when you put this black layer on top of it, it traps these other layers and forces them to make your eyes think that like, ah, there's a shadow here, right? That's the shadow of the snake. Oh, this is where the light is shining on the snake. So it's just kind of thinking about, it's a lot of thinking about where light is shining, you know, like your fictional light, like where is it coming from and how is it altering the thing it's touching?
How did you get into like screen printing or printing in like general?
It's mostly just because I wanted to be able to make, multiple copies of things, because there's, you know, the big difference between like if you're trying to make art for a living in terms of like you're trying to sell things, you know, to people for a living, you know, you can kind of basically follow two basic paths. You know, this is a gross oversimplification, but bear with me. You know, you can have a painting, you do like an oil painting or an acrylic painting. Big, it's beautiful, it's got a lot of stuff going on in it. And you're like, okay, I've got one painting and I'm going to sell it for $1,000 to one person. And that's how I'm going to make $1,000. Or you can have, you know, a print that you make 100 copies of, right? And you're like, okay, I have this print and I'm going to sell 100 copies of it to 100 people, and each one is $10. And so then 100 people have that print, right? And if that print contains some kind of idea that you're trying to convey, you're trying to like promote some kind of message or convey something that you think is interesting, or like I said before, how, you know, make some kind of simple symbol of like political identification that people can relate to, then that thing that you've made, if you make a print, that goes out to 100 people, And they all have it in their homes, and they live with it, they look at it, and they think about it. And that's with them every day, and they only had to pay $10 for it. And the painting, you know, maybe it's just in one person's house, maybe it's in a museum, maybe, like, you know, it's in storage somewhere, nobody ever gets to look at it. So whatever idea you put in it, you know, it has a very limited public life. So the thing that I really enjoy about printmaking is because I am always, like, not always, but most of the time, I'm trying to, like, communicate something. And, you know, that's just how I work. It's what I'm interested in doing. And sometimes that thing is more obvious, sometimes it's less obvious, but I like the idea of having, you know, being able to have this idea go into the houses or in the hands of many more people than just one, right? So that's the thing that printmaking allows me to do.
We have a couple more minutes left. If any McDaniel students have final urgent questions.
What advice would you give to any sort of high school student, anybody who wants to learn printmaking or just sort of is inspired by kind of the stuff that you do? What advice would you give to them in their future, in their career? Or, yeah.
Sure. With printmaking, you know, like, silkscreen printing requires a little bit of infrastructure that can be, you know, a little difficult to set up and costs a little bit of money to get going. But block printing is something you can do with almost, like, no money. You can get started block printing, just making prints for your, you know, if you just want to practice the idea of printmaking. All you need is, like, a piece of linoleum, some carving tools, right? I have these, you know, carving tools like this, you know, which I use to, like, carve into the surface, or things like this. So these are better examples. They're much smaller, you know, making much smaller lines here with this sort of thing. And you can, you know, carve a surface, you can rub the ink on it, you can press the paper on it with a wooden spoon, and you can make a print, and it is easy to do and requires almost no, you know, no machinery. Like, to get started, you can just get started as simply as possible. One of the things that I like to say about, as you sort of advance up the level of printmaking is to do stuff with friends. Don't try to do everything yourself. You know, you share resources to, you know, to get the tools you need to do the things you want to do. If you're working with other people to do that, if you're able to, you know, to pool your resources to make things possible for a group, it's a lot easier to make something happen than it is if you're just trying to do it by yourself and you only want to do it by yourself and you want to have all your own stuff. It's easier to do it if you share resources, and you can go a lot further if you're collaborating, both on sharing resources and on, like, building whatever it is that you want to build.
Thanks for sharing all of this with us, and thanks for being here, Roger.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Does anybody else have anything they want to add or before we close out? Roger, do you have anything that you want to promote? Any shows coming up or?
No, not really. no. But thanks very much for having me to talk. That was fun. Good questions.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
You've been listening to an interview with Portland-based artist Roger Peet. We are Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm the producer, Erica Thomas. You can catch our show on the fourth Wednesday of each month from 11 to noon on KBOO FM. That's KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and streaming at kboo.fm/program/art-talk-bus-stop. We'll be back in June with a new guest. Sweetest of love, I found out.